Welcome to Entanglement Radio on the Conversations from the Brink Network. I am your host, Angela Levesque, and this show is all about the potential and possibilities of what it means to be human. Today's guest, we have Leslie J. Hart on, and we are going to be continuing our conversation from last week about Indigenous wisdom and the Council Fire. If you'd like to know more about my program or learn more about the project, Conversations from the Brink, you can go to conversationsfromthebrink.com. You can find more about myself, Angela Levesque, at angelalevesque.com. And just a reminder, one of the things that we're really trying to do at Conversations from the Brink is really provide insight and inspiration for humanity's next step. And Entanglement Radio is part of that mandate. Next week, I'm going to be hosting a meditation gathering. Sorry, that's October 25th at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. And this month, we are going to focus on transmuting the fear. If you are here in the United States, if you've listened to any of the debates or the spectacle that is our 2016 election cycle, there is a lot of hateful rhetoric. There's a lot of fear. And we are going to just see if we can, with our loving intention, transmute that fear into something that's much more beautiful and positive. So again, that's next Tuesday, October 25th at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. And if you'd like more information on that, you can go to conversationsfromthebrink.com. And it's under the groups category, and there's the meditation gathering there. Or you can find out more on my website, angelalevesque.com. Find us on Facebook and on Twitter. We love to hear from you. Next week on the program, we are going to have Daniel Schumachtenberger. I'm going to have to see if practice that before I actually speak to him. It's got about 15 letters in his last name. And he is actually from Neurohacker Collective, which is this really interesting project that takes a whole systems view of cognitive enhancement. And it kind of blends psychology, neurology, and pharmacology to, enhance our cognitive capabilities, which is pretty interesting. So I'm excited to talk to him about that. He studied a lot of things very in-depthly from a scientific point of view that I have looked at in deep meditation. So it'll be a good conversation. But today, as I mentioned, we are going to be talking about Council Fire. I know in my own personal life, I have been spending more and more time connecting with groups, actually a lot of groups of women, and just holding collective intention, just being together to see what we can do as a group, you know, powers and numbers. And sometimes it's very intentional. We're sending our loving thought and intention to something very specific. And sometimes it's just about holding space and gathering and being together and exploring some of the mysteries and the unknown. So we're going to continue our conversation from last week. Leslie J. Hart is actually one of, he's been near the very beginning of the project Conversations from the Brink, and he is a regular contributor. So if you'd like to, if you're interested in what we talk about today and like to learn more about him, you can find many of his articles right now on the Conversations from the Brink website. So let me introduce our guest. Leslie J. Hart is the founder of the Medicine Lodge, an alternative healing service based in shamanism. He's an intuitive, sensitive, and shamanic practitioner, applying his gifts to help clients gain clarity on their path to self-healing. He serves as a paranormal consultant. He's also a lifelong student and practitioner of both the Peruvian mountain and plains native healing traditions. He's a Masa carrier and graduate of the Kemapi Spirit Energies from Alberta, Canada. He's also a Yusui Reiki Master Teacher and is a Level 1 Pendulum Dowser and Scryer, and also a very active contributor at Conversations from the Brink. So with that, I feel very honored and blessed to welcome Leslie J. Hart back to the program. Hi, Les. How you doing?
Hey, good morning. How are you, Angela?
I'm happy to have you here. I just think this is such an important topic. Any way that we can assist people in gathering and coming together. I was hoping, in case people are listening, of course, we're doing the show live today, which is very exciting. If you could just give a really quick synopsis of what the Council Fire is and the vision of why you think it's so important to bring this to humanity right now.
Yeah, sure. Well, in our last conversation and in the articles I talked about, the inspiration coming from a vision that I experienced through a shamanic journey and also through my studies. And one of the inspirations was looking to the Iroquois and what they accomplished in the Iroquois nations, their confederacy. I look to that because it was also what I believe to be the inspiration and foundation for the our government that we have, the United States Constitution. When you look at the basic structure, and if you examine what the Iroquois were doing back in the 1400s, when they first devised this system of government, there's so many parallels to what we have in our U.S. Form of governance. But one of the main, I think one of the things that I noticed over time was the way that they came to governing, the way that they gathered, the way they came together in community. When I say they, the Iroquois, in contrast to how like our local governments come together, the way our federal government comes together. And I see a lot of symbology just in the way we come to a meeting, the way we gather. And in my vision, I discovered that, or it was shared with me through that last chief, that we can receive guidance that we normally wouldn't have access to. We can get information that maybe that's not always available to us. But if we come and prepare ourselves in the right way, if we include the element of fire to our meetings, and you know, when the scholars and the Jesuits who would record the history of the indigenous people, and when they're recording the procedures and nuances of the Iroquois Confederacy, I don't want to say a cornerstone because that would represent a square, but what's the central to their coming together was the fire, and they referred to it as the council fire, and it was calling all the members to sit around the council fire. The idea of everyone being in a circle, in a circle, no one's above, no one's below. You know, everyone is equal, and it's for me the council fire. If we, before we even get started into what we're deciding, what we're trying to accomplish collectively, it's the way we approach coming together that we need to pay attention to. And if we come to meetings, if we come to governance, if we come together with the right intention and pay attention to certain structure, I think it's going to shift the ultimate way that we interact with each other. Like I said, the circle is foundational to these gatherings, as opposed to what we see if we look at the Senate. If we look at even our local government, it always seems like there's a head and everyone's facing like a classroom, and that's one person telling everyone else what to think and do. So these traditional practices that I've introduced in the council fire, if people are willing to take a look at it, I believe it can really shift the way the way that we make decisions, the way that we relate to each other, and even shift our goals collectively. Like, you know, why are we doing something? Because we're conscious of As I said before, the fire represents a connection to spirit, but it's also a representation and a living form of our ancestors, of the ancient and wise ones. And with the indigenous belief, it's also thinking that we're coming to these gatherings to make decisions that are going to affect seven generations into the future. So it's not as a selfish point of view, and not as such a limited way that sometimes meetings and you know, governance will come together in kind of a short-sighted way.
So you have mentioned the word governance quite a few times. Can you see that this coming together in this council fire can also be used for maybe PTAs or something that, or maybe just a group of people who are in community organization or something? That is this something that can be less politically focused?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it's my intention, my hope that this will start, you know, in that grassroots way, and that hopefully it will catch on. Like you mentioned PTA and coming together as a community, even in the workplace, you know, maybe unions or just even among friends. When the decision-making process is going on, this is a way to change the dynamics, and it's a simple thing of what I'm suggesting, like coming together in the circle, because right then and there, if we insist that we sit in the circle, we're changing the dynamics, and we're not having that hierarchy anymore. You know, we're becoming equals. We're all becoming part of the conversation. And when we make the fire the centerpiece, even if everyone there is not necessarily intuitive, it's a representation. You know, it's a representation of our integrity, of the bigger picture, to remind us, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. I like there's an intentional act in doing that. And one of the things you mentioned last week, if people are listening, that yes, this can be done around an actual fire, but if it also, you know, you're in the middle of Canada in the winter, you can do it indoors around a white candle and a flame. And I love that there's a certain amount of reverence, and I really enjoy the word integrity because it does represent something more. That we need to be connected. And I mean, there's so much symbolism in even just coming together in a circle. I want to talk for a little bit, though. In a lot of your writings on Conversations from the Brink, you talk about the role of science and religion and politics. And first of all, how do you think that that has hindered us, I guess, from reaching our full potential, from making the changes that we need to really save our earth? Because that was part of the vision, right? Is that we have a limited amount of time to make some big changes and live in communion with the earth, to live in communion with the Great Spirit. And that being said, how do you feel that things, institutions like our politics, our our science and religion, how that hampers us from being able to make those changes?
That's a great big topic, right? So I see, from my perspective, government and religion kind of always walked hand in hand. I've always complemented each other. It's as though they're always been in cahoots, the two of them, in human history, because religion it creates conformity. It takes away, or those that participate and organize religion, there's an aspect of it just by its construct that we, if we participate, we give away much of our right to discern. And we don't, those that come to organized religion, we, you know, you don't get to kind of cherry pick what feels right, what resonates with you and what doesn't. It's a whole bill of goods. It's a whole package that, you know, we're, those that are involved aren't really allowed to question. And it plays on, I think, one of our natural drives, which is humans, we're drawn to come to community. And we're drawn, or we have a deep need for acceptance. And we nationalism kind of plays to that need, that deep-seated need that we have, which is to belong. You know, we all want to belong. And religion and politics tend to exploit what is very beautiful in us, but is also a vulnerability of humanity, of all of us. We have these hardwired tendencies and desires and needs that, you know, when people with ulterior motives come into a position of power, and when they use the politics and use the religion for their own purposes, you know, and now they have virtual armies of people who are doing their bidding, that are doing their will. They're controlling the masses through these institutions. And it's that consensual reality, and it's the giving away of individual power that is harming us as a species and our planet. You know, you can have a belief without giving away all your power. You know, you can have a faith in a higher spirit of whatever that is without having to have that spoon fed to you and conform to one set of teachings. And maybe there's a certain, I don't know if it's laziness about us, or I think, you know, in the way our civilization is constructed, we have to work. We have to work to live, which is, it's not that it's new idea, but especially in our time, money is the driver in the last century, and we have to actually get out. And without money, we really, it's really difficult to survive. We all know this. And, you know, I think we're caught into this grind, and people tend to give away their power too easily.
So, you know, listening to this, and you know that you and I are definitely on the same page, but to play sort of the devil's advocate, you talk about the council fire and used in governance, right, which is government. And then a lot of the, especially what we talked about last week with the indigenous wisdom, that is, I would say, a form of Native American spirituality or religion. So how do you view things like the council fire and maybe a nature-based religion or spirituality? How is that separate from what you were just explaining?
I think in the article, I realized that, you know, I was walking a fine line with indigenous spirituality and religion. You know, the two words get conflated all the time, right? Religion and spirituality. And sometimes in different conversations, we try, oh, well, spirituality and religion are all the same and they're compatible. And what I'm saying is, no, they're not. They're two ends of a spectrum. And from my perspective, you have religion on, if we can imagine a scale, you know, zero to whatever. And religion is on one side, and spirituality is on the far other side. I would say, like, the middle point would probably be those that have no belief. Atheists in our society, right? They don't believe, or there's no evidence to support that. And so organized religion, it provides, you know, prepackaged book with dogma and everything, and you don't need to know anything more. You just have to open the book and it's all there, and you just have to accept it. But it doesn't provide experiential evidence. It doesn't provide knowledge in the form of experience. So when you're an atheist, it's not that you maybe perhaps don't want to be open to ideas, but there's just nothing that supports such kind of belief systems. Where the spiritual path is all about searching and looking and having these personal experiences. So with the council fire and the opening ceremonies, I suggested to honor the traditions, because the indigenous people had, right, this egalitarian belief system, which is nature-based. It's recognizing, and I guess you could say it is a religion, but a religion that is not about dogma. It's not about what someone said in the past that we cannot validate with any certainty. It's about something we can go outside today and look and know that it's a truth. It's just that, you know, today we're so separated from the natural world, and the indigenous people lived it, they breathed it, they knew the natural world because they were in it every day. So opening sacred space is, it tends to be universal. It's not exclusive to Native Americans in North America. I found it in Peru. I found that they honor the four directions. You can go to the Inuit. You can go to Russia. All over the world, it's kind of amazing that there are these core these core practices that exist, and it's all around nature. It's all and these ways of viewing the world that aren't part of our Western minds. Have I answered that, or am I?
No, you did. You did a great job, and I think that the distinction, it's actually one of my pet peeves when people conflate spirituality and religion, because often, you know, when I'm creating tags for my podcast or whatever, they'll have religion and spirituality as the same category, and I think that some religious people would not enjoy my my brand of spirituality. So I do, and I have to say, those groups that I was talking about at the beginning of the program, we cast a circle, we give honor to the four directions, and it just, to me, it just makes a lot of sense, and I totally agree with you that's something that has been utilized, adopted in a lot of different spiritual traditions. So I absolutely love that. So I want to maybe get a little bit weird here. We'll okay. See where this conversation goes. In one of your articles, I think it's the second one of your Council Fire series, which now there is four, you say, I wanted to ask, what do you mean when you say that there is coding in our DNA that hinders us from our true potential?
Yeah, that has potential to get really weird, right? that whole idea. But I kind of alluded to it in this conversation a little bit, that we have, it's in our nature, we have certain tendencies. You know, people, we have this drive to conform. We have this need to belong. It's almost like things that we can observe in nature, like in like a herd, or with, the primates, right? That community sense. But what I'm alluding to, I know people are going to listen to this eventually.
You can't get too weird for me, you know
Yes.
that.
Is that, well, might as well go all in, right?
Yes.
My feeling, my sense is that science doesn't have a real clear explanation of why we humans are what we are. There's a lot of mystery around us, and it's evolution tried to show that we followed. There's holes in evolution, but they tried to say, oh, we started off as this little monkey and we just kept getting better and better, and then we evolved into where we are now. But I think there's a lot of information coming out online, a lot of it's out there if you want to look for it, that there's these mysteries in our DNA, these coding that and things in our DNA that probably shouldn't be there, and there's nowhere else in the natural world in here on Earth where these pieces of DNA should, like, we can't say where did it come from or how did it get there. There's a lot of talk about individuals with Rh negative blood type, and if you look in all the races of human beings, it's almost non-existent, in the African population or ancestry, the Asian, but you do find it in Caucasians, but from a very specific region. And it's like you can't, science just is unable to say, well, that just didn't spontaneously happen. It had to be introduced somehow.
So basically, you're dancing around the fact that you think that there has been some genetic manipulation.
Yes, there has been. We have been manipulated genetically to be what we are. And in my, not only because I watch all the TV shows that like Ancient Aliens and the all around the world, there's evidence of it doesn't necessarily have to be like from an alien perspective, but there's pyramids and they exist all over the globe. And there was no way for early people that we know of, to have global travel. But yet did these pyramids just spontaneously start appearing, without, like, did people just get the idea in South America to start building them just like they did in Egypt? When I traveled to Peru, in Ica, there were museums and there were these elongated skulls, right? And the skulls were they weird, right? Because they were really elongated, and some of them, if you look close, we have these sutures on our, all human beings have. There's these sutures at the top of your skull. So a lot of them do. And so you can say, well, they did binding, but not all of the skulls have these sutures or the same that we find. So there's no explanation why some have them and some don't. Down in South America, it's really interesting because there's the Nazca lines and well, who were the people talking to? What was that all about? My last trip this summer, I traveled through Utah and Colorado near Dinosaur, and the petroglyphs there. I've posted some and it's obvious that they're not human. You know, when I don't know what human beings have little antennas coming out of their heads, you know. And it just, we keep, I think that the Western mainstream has been trying to explain it away and trying to explain it away until the point where, you know, what, as much as people laugh about and how ridiculous it sounds, that our origins are probably our origins are probably from an alien race or races. Compare that to the stories of religion, and you know, people accept that, you know, slam dunk. Oh yeah, that's what happened. But yet there's more evidence if we open our eyes and look around the world, and even the stories, you know, the Anunnaki and every race, including Egyptians, speak about these hybrids of animal human beings. And it's like, was this just people really having some wild, wild imaginations, or was it based in something?
Well, you know that I mean, I talk to people about aliens and angels and all sorts of things. And I, in fact, on a shamanic journey, was shown our DNA and this idea of a two-strand DNA and the rest of it being junk DNA is, I was shown that our DNA is much more complex, and there's currently this activation going on where we are reconnecting to more of a 12-strand DNA. And I do believe that there's a suppression. And, you know, people can listen to this and they can say, oh, you know, aliens, but aliens are not. If we go back to the original conversation that we started having at the beginning about having to make some choices and having to understand the world in a different way, because ultimately, if our lives is just about consumerism, if it's just about you know, getting up, going to work, coming home, and then watching Netflix or taking our kids to soccer practice, we aren't, there's no impetus, there's no motivation, there's no reason to make any changes. And as we start to look at the world in a different way, which is what we're going to need to do if we're going to want to make these changes, to understand, like you were talking about, nature-based spirituality, living in communion with the Great Spirit, these are the kind of things. So even if you're listening to this and you're not on board with aliens, which is fine, understand the world in a deeper way. Start looking at the mysteries. Start diving in, having experiential experiences, as you were saying, of the unknown, of God, of source, whatever. But it's those kind of connections that we need to make in order to have the impetus to make these changes. Because mindless consumerism, getting the latest iPhone, that's not going to do it. It's just not. So, if that's the whole point of why we're here, and I think ultimately that's it, is start thinking about why we're here. Why did your soul come to this place at this time? And if that story or that contemplation involves aliens or you know, genetic manipulation, then that's fine. But at least you're understanding that there's something much more deeper and beautiful and more spiritual. And so, gathering around the council fire is one way to bring in that level of meaning, to bring in that level of purpose, to create community, to connect, to not just connect with one another, but to connect to something bigger than ourselves. So, I'm okay talking about aliens. I'm okay talking about basically anything, because anything we don't talk about doesn't change. It doesn't connect us to it. And I mean, anyway, so there's a bit of a little rant there, but.
Yeah. You know, and as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, if tomorrow, if one of the big mainstream news, you know, the mainstream news was to come out and say, or the president was to go on TV and say, you know, all that stuff that we've been, you know, all those stories about the Roswell and the alien crash landing and how we said it was a weather balloon. And if he stood before the American audience and said, well, we've been lying to you for 50 years, and no, we that is what you thought it was. Well, everybody would be like, well, now it's legitimate to think that way, because our society is about consensual reality. And The sad thing is, it's only, it seems like the majority of us will only take something on face value or believe to be true unless those that we've given our power away to say it so. So we give our power away to the government, and it's only going to be on our current path is it, when our government tells us it's true. Russia and Vladimir Putin could come out tomorrow and say that there's evidence of alien intervention on our planet, and we might give it half, half of like credence. But in our here in the United States, it's almost like we're not going to believe something unless it's on the mainstream news, unless our government, unless our president comes forth and tells us. And the sad thing is, we know that they lie to us all the time. But yet, that's almost like the criteria or the bar that we're setting before we're going to entertain certain thoughts. And it may be a cold day in hell before, the powers that be speak to issues that intuitively, I think a lot of people are waking up to these other alternative possibilities.
Well, and I think that's important, but we are out of time. So I do want to say that if you are really interested in gathering in a circle, in creating your own council fire, Les has written four articles now. I suggest you read them all. We have now two podcasts on this, and I really think it's important to come together and create that meaning and understand why we're here, and so that translates into making different choices in our life, because ultimately that's what it comes down to. So Les, I want to give you an opportunity right now to let my listeners know where they can connect with you, find out more about you, websites, all of that good stuff.
I'm going to keep writing on Conversations from the Brink. Leslie James Hart Shaman is my Facebook page. My website, shamanhealerwarrior.com. And, with this council fire, it would really, I think it would be awesome if, even if you gathered with some friends in a circle, put a candle in the center of your meeting, and maybe go through some of the protocols that I've introduced, and just experiment with it. See, is this just silliness, or is there something to it? See how it feels. And I'd love to hear what the experiences are. And so, in other words, it's like we're doing this. Whatever you want to expand on, whatever, you don't have to go into it knowing the answers, but I think it's a way to get answers and a way to approach coming together that, but it's experiential. Not until you try it, give it a chance, do I think it's really going to have meaning.
All right. Well, thank you, Les, so much for being on the program. And as I said at the beginning, not only has he written four articles on how you can create your own council fire, the meaning, the vision behind it, but he also writes a lot of other things on there. So you can find out more at conversationsfromthebrink.com. Coming up next week, we have Daniel Schumachtenberger, and he is part of Neurohacker Collective, and where they look at whole systems view of cognitive enhancement. So as we talk about the potential and possibilities, this is a new frontier. So if you'd like to know more about myself, Angela Levesque, you can go to angelalevesque.com. You can find me on Facebook and on Twitter, as well as social media for Conversations from the Brink and Entanglement Radio. Well, that is our show for this week. Thank you so much for listening in. And we will see you next week.